at your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now the host of the show, Rich Orris.
All right, good morning, good morning, good Saturday morning. Hey, you're tuned into the Home Improvement Show, just like he said, right here on Camo X. I'm your host, Rich Orris, and I'm here every Saturday morning. We open up the phone lines to talk to you about your home, from routine maintenance to those big remodeling projects you've been dreaming about forever and ever. We can chat about any of that. The number you're going to need, 314-436-7900. Again, 314-436-7900. So whether you're fixing a leaky roof, you're refreshing up a tired bathroom, you're tackling some energy efficiency upgrades maybe, or just keeping your home in tip-top shape for the seasons to come, getting ready, whatever it is, I'm here to give you some tips, ideas, and some solutions that really work for you. So grab a cup of coffee, get on the line, think about your to-do list, and let's get started. Your home, it's your investment, and your questions that drive this show. So we're really looking for it. Hey, let's just go straight to the phones and see who's up first. We got Mary Beth on the line. Let's see what's going on with Mary Beth. Hey, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Awesome.
Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you for helping me provide that service. I appreciate the call.
Well, my problem is during the storms we had this year, I had damage to my shutters outside, and the shutters are about 50 years old, and they're wood. I want to replace them. I want to know what the best thing to replace them with. I want to have something that I don't have to paint, you know, that's durable.
Uh-huh.
And I also want to know, who do you get to do that? Because I don't know who you even go to get new shutters.
Sure, sure. So there are different types of shutters out there. And depending on the exposure and the length of the warranty on the color and the fade and how all that works, everything you put on eventually is going to fade, or something's going to happen to it, and eventually it will need painted or replaced, or something will have to happen. But you can find some great products that could outlast the time that you're in the home. Some of these might last 20 years or so before you really start seeing a lot of fade or something where it's not looking that great. So kind of working up the food chain, starting with the most common and the best expense, the lowest expense you're looking at is just the typical vinyl shutters. And a lot of those do now come with fade warranties that are 10 to even 20 years long. So they don't fade out as much and as quickly as the shutters did in the 90s, and when they were putting a lot on in the 80s and the 90s and really first starting to make all these products. So they will last longer, and it'll be the most economical version. And you can get them in all sorts of styles and colors. So you can go anywhere. There is like a PVC, more of a solid PVC type shutter. And there's also composite shutters. So it's kind of that the composite shutter is going to be the one that's most like the wood shutter. It will look the most like the wood shutter. It kind of is a piece of wood, but it's made out of composite material. It's not going to rot, anything like that. You're going to 20, 30 years against rot, and probably again 10 to maybe 20 years against the paint fading, because they will be factory painted. So it's a great paint job. They're heavier, they're a little harder to install. You need these clips and mounting, and in how you install them, so it takes a little longer to install. So the composite, depending on your home and what you're after, will probably look the best and cost the most. So you can kind of see.
And how much is how much would that be that I'm looking? Around what amounts am I talking about? I have 8.
Uh huh. So I mean, depending on the situation of where they are and how they mount, if they're on vinyl siding, if they're on brick, all these things are going to sway how
it's on brick.
They get put on there. So composite shutters can be really expensive. I mean, they can literally cost like $1,000 a pair or something to purchase. Depending on what you find. So literally composite shutters can be anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 to install on a house per pair. And the vinyl, it depends on who you find with labor, and a handyman's going to be a lot less than a full service design build remodeling company, and then people in between will be in between. But a lot of vinyl shutters, you can find them common sizes, the louvered type, really, really inexpensive at like big box stores from $100, $200 a pair, or you can get up to $250 to $500 a pair, depending on the style and the color and the shape and the size, because you can order these too in specific sizes. They'll be more expensive that way, but they'll fit better, they'll look better, they'll line up with what's next to them better. So you're kind of looking at like, where do I want it to line up? That's the detail we kind of get into. So again, you could be $500 to $1,500 a pair on vinyl, depending on what it is and who installs it and all of that. As far as the installer goes, you're looking for anything between just a handyman that has some experience, performing stuff like that, through a siding company, and then all the way up to like at Mosby Building Arts. I have a job right now that we're getting ready to do that we signed in I guess in August, early August, and we're ordering the shutters and we're just replacing the shutters on the house. We would do something like that. We have a lot of service and things. We're going to be the top of the food chain. The handyman's going to be the bottom, and depending on the siding company, whether they want to deal with it or how busy they are, that's the other thing you end up against, is they just kind of go, well, I just don't want to mess with just shutters, so they just don't want to do it because they've got all these, and labor's hard to come by, and the whole gamut gets like that. But basically, that's kind of the who you're looking for, is anywhere from a handyman through siding companies to a company like Mosby Building Arts.
Okay, great. Thank you for your help.
All right. Yeah, no problem. No problem at all. That's very common, something we do all the time. And if Bob can hold on here through the quick break a little bit, I got to get into our first break here, but we'll get to Bob and more questions, more answers, and more home improvement show right after this break. We are back. Home improvement show. Hey, I forgot to say, no cards till a little bit later this evening, like 5 o'clock or whatever. So we got the full time, the full 2 hours to get everybody in. So don't be shy. Don't be a stranger. Get with me today. Whatever you have going on, 314-436-7900, straight into me. Let's talk about your home. And for now, let's talk about Bob's home. We got Bob on the line. Let's get over there and see what is happening with Bob. How you doing, Bob?
Doing pretty good, Rich. Morning. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you, my friend. What's going on?
Yeah, well, my question is, I'm seeing a lot of roofs get put on in my neighborhood, due to storm damage back in March.
Yep.
And so I've noticed something a little bit unusual that they're doing in the valleys on certain homes, not all of them. But I'll say one of them is a hip roof, and the other one's hip roof combination with a maybe a 412 pitch and a 612 pitch. Uh-huh. So in the valleys, they're using some type of metal, you know, I'll call it, you know, a metal valley.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed that one of them looked like it was installed under the shingle, and the other one looks like they stuck it right on top of it, on top of the shingles, you know, when they come together in those valleys.
Uh-huh.
Is there any advantage or disadvantage, or is one of them maybe installed properly and the other one might be installed improperly that you would know about?
Is there a new practice
that they're doing, you know, it's kind of a contrast look, if you will. You know, it's a slightly different color than the roof.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily a new practice. It's something that has happened for a whole lot of years. It just hasn't happened on a lot of kind of standard roofs with asphalt shingles. It originates from slate roofs and clay tile roofs, and it's coming into play with thicker roofs. So a lot of the new asphalt shingles, so if they're going with like a really thick, decorative, long-lasting asphalt shingle roof, because there's major upgrades, some of those will actually require those metal, what we call metal valleys. So, and my guess is what you're seeing in the difference between the two, or at least I hope so, is they sometimes they do that metal valley and they put it on and it just kind of tucks under the shingles and they make those cuts on the shingles coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good, great, long-lasting product. Usually under that shingle, when they end that metal, they'll put a little bend back around, like a hem seam, we call it. And that will kind of keep any water going sideways. If you get just a little bit or some drips or kind of running sideways along the shingles, it'll hit that and then kind of follow the shingles down. The other thing hopefully they should be doing is still using the ice and water shield in that, where they put that 3-foot wide piece of sticky tape right up that valley. Then they put the metal on, then the shingles go over it. I'm hoping that the one that looks like it's on top of the shingles just has an extra bend, because another way that they do it, because generally in the center, you'll have a little bend up that kind of guides that water down, and then it just kind of widens and goes under the shingles. But sometimes they'll do a vertical bend up, back down, and then across underneath the shingles. And that's meant to kind of slow down any of the water I was talking about that might want to go a little bit sideways and follow those shingles the kind of the wrong way. That kind of should help with that. It gives it a nice clean line, and it gives a area for the shingles to kind of butt up against. So it's just kind of sticking up vertical a little higher than the shingle.
Yeah, I got you.
And I hope that's what they did with the one that looks like it might be on, because if it's on top of the shingle, if it's truly on top of the shingles, that is extremely incorrect and we'll have problems down the road without question.
Yeah, and that's what it kind of looks like to me. You know, I mean, I'm looking at it from street level, and I did tell the neighbor, I said, I don't know, I would be suspect to that particular design, you know what I mean? Because it's so wide. I think that thing is like 8 inches wide. It looks flat, where the other one is definitely tucked underneath the shingles. And so I didn't know about the channel that you were, that particular bend that you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But that makes a lot of sense to me, just from my own personal observation.
Yep.
And so I said, well, the only way to really tell is to get up there and get a really close look, you know, because I can't see that good from the street level.
Yeah, and
I
can see
good enough to say, why is that thing so wide and the other one is far narrower? And I can clearly see the shingle is lapped over the top of that particular one. But anyway, it was just a curious thing, because I'm in line for a roof myself, you know, due to the storm. But my roof is going on 1 year old, and it still looks great to me. You know what I mean? When I get up there, I can't see any reason to replace it. But the insurance company said, oh, yeah, you have, you know, some damage. You know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's significant. But so my next question would be is, do you ask your roofer to do something like that? You know, because it does look pretty cool to me. You know what I mean? a nice contrast.
I mean, you can, and you could ask them what, you know, what's the cost difference? Does it really matter with the type of shingles? Because I'm curious if any of these other homes just used just a standard kind of asphalt shingle, or if they, you know, are any of them kind of designer looking, different yeah. styles, because some of those shingles are really, really
yeah.
thick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they've done, where I've seen the vertical kind of bend up on those valleys is really clay tile roofs. I've seen it more on that because clay tile's thicker and there's edges to cover sometimes. So they do that to kind of have something for that clay tile to go up against. And that's more the
yeah,
reason
yeah.
they did some of that. But yeah, not all roofing installers are created equal. Not all know
mm-hmm.
everything. Yeah. I've installed more roofing shingles than I care to admit. I've learned a lot about all this. I've installed a bunch. I have never put in a metal valley, like installed it myself. I've had jobs do it. And I've had roofers okay. do it for okay. me, but I've never personally, I've roofed entire houses, but I've never roofed the type of house where I did that metal, and I wouldn't trust myself to do it and perform
okay.
it, but I would.
Yeah, that was just curious to
or
me
if I did,
I've
it would take like 10 times too long.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
yep.
And just, you know, and I mean, you know, I don't know, and could you just explain one more thing?
Sure.
About the difference between the standard shingle, besides the thick, is it all about the thickness versus what I'll call the architectural shingle? You know, I mean, whatever shape it may be, you know, I mean,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Do you understand
yeah,
my question?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And yeah, the architectural, a standard architectural shingle is thicker than a typical, which we used to use all the time, the three tab kind of flat shingles. And
right,
they
right,
and they
yeah.
get the longer they last and the more they do, they get thicker. And the thickness and heaviness and how much those asphalt pieces that are on there creates the life expectancy, how long it will last, how long does it take to wash those pieces off. So as you go up the chain on buying shingles, when you get to impact resistant IR shingle, when you get
okay.
to the ones that the mildew resistant, where it won't, they'll say, you know, it won't get that kind of mildew look on it for quite
mm-hmm.
some time. They're putting things in the asphalt. They're putting more asphalt pieces and they're thickening that shingle up. So a max definition shingle is a little thicker and it shows more shadow lines, but then they have kind of like designer shingles. Some look like slate. Some still look like the regular architectural shingle, and they have different patterns and designs of these. Some can look like a kind of a shake. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
There's
yeah,
different
yeah.
styles, and they're very thick. They're going to come with like a 50-year warranty instead of like 30.
Mm-hmm.
And those are very thick shingles. And so when you do the valleys and you're lapping one over the other, some of those will get so thick that the manufacturer says, don't do it that way.
Okay.
They'll make them use the metal because of how thick that shingle is. It's just an issue if you get it too much built up in the valleys and too thick and tying into one another. So the manufacturers, so it isn't a bad idea to read the installation instructions of some of these shingles, because a lot of
sure.
them, they are different. And they will
gotcha.
Be installed a little bit different on a hip roof than a typical gable roof in different scenarios.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You answered my question well, and I do appreciate you giving a complete and detailed answer.
Well, I appreciate the call, Bob. I got to get to a break, but that was awesome.
Gotcha.
Great conversation. And yeah, if you're just curious, that's why we're here. Just help kind of figure that out, because you're seeing a lot going on and you just don't know everything about it. Let's see what we could do to help you out. 314-436-7900. We're going to get into a break. More home improvement in just a minute. Here we go. Here we go. KMOX Home Improvement Show. Rich Orr is sitting in the big chair for you here today. awaiting your questions, your thoughts, your comments, your concerns. What's happening at your home? Anything you need, you can find me right here, 314-436-7900. And I want to go back and hopefully maybe Mary Beth is still kind of tuned in and listening, because I want to talk about something that seems very simple, but sometimes you just don't know, or you just don't know the circumstance and really might not understand. And so something like installing shutters can end up being at times more complex than you may think, depending on how the house is, how the shutters are installed, how the windows are, everything's positioned. And so if you have a brick home and windows are in the brick and the shutters mount on top of the brick next to the windows, it's a pretty simple situation. You're still trying to mount and drill into the brick and get them mounted and all of that. But there's a scenario out there that I've seen, and this is the shutters that we're getting ready to do too, actually has this scenario on the front of the house. And it's something from, I would guess like 60s, 70s, maybe early 80s homes, probably more in the 70s, that with a brick front. And what they did was when they put the windows in, they went ahead and put the shutters next to the windows, and they put the brick around the actual shutters too. So if you have a 3-foot-wide window and 2 12-inch shutters, your brick opening is now 5 feet wide, and you have a wall behind the actual shutter. So in the one we're doing, it had wood shutters, and the previous owner put vinyl shutters on top of the wood shutters. So then I'm looking at it and I'm going, okay, well, here's the thing. You got rotted wood shutters behind it. When water gets behind these shutters, it's to the wall. It's behind the brick. It runs behind the brick. It's getting to your wall system. So we need to look at a really specific way to install these shutters. It's like, what do you do to the wall before the shutters go on so that it's protected? And if rain blows, because if you just mount vinyl shutters on top of a wood wall, you're going to have some circumstance that you get wind-driven rain. It's going to get behind these shutters. It's going to run behind the brick. So we're installing some wood backing and some house wrap and some metal flashing around all four sides of where these shutters are going, up against the side of the brick, the bottom of the brick, lapping over the brick, so that basically without the shutter even there, if you put a sprinkler and just it kept raining on this wall, that water would go where we want, and it would run off on top of the brick and out and down and go away. And then we put the flashing tape where the mounting screws and everything are going to go to help keep more water out from not following the fasteners into the wall. And then your shutters are mounted. Looks great from the street. It is a neat look to kind of see how they did this with the brick and the windows and stuff. It's just not a great practice of a way to do it. So when they build homes today, if you have brick, they're going to do it like the older homes. And I'm talking older than the 60s and 70s, where it's just a brick home. Your windows are there and all your shutters and all that stuff is on top of the brick. Definitely less issues with that, less going on with that. And there's a lot of things that we see and that we do and that we perform that can seem pretty simple. In many types of jobs and in many ways, It can seem so much simpler than it is. So another situation I run into from time to time, that I just had one this past week again, where it's a little mini small room addition. And someone's looking and they're saying, all right, well, I just want to, and this is the common phrase all the time, I just want to bump out. Like, I just want a little more room here. I want to shift things a little bit. I'm talking like maybe 4 feet. Like, if we could just bump this room out 4 feet, it could give me the space I need for the way I live my life and what we're trying to accomplish in this room. And then I'm trying to explain that, well, that's a room addition. That is adding on to the house. If you bump out and you have distance off the ground and you can keep it under, you can keep it 2 feet or under, then you could possibly just cantilever new floor joists, longer floor joists from the basement if the basement's wide open, and maybe create that without, create an overhang without a foundation. But when you look at going out 3 or 4 feet, you need something to hold this up. You're close to the ground. It's a foundation. It's the same type of foundation that a full-on 20-foot by 25-foot room addition is going to have. And so as we're looking and explaining, and I'm going, well, when you do bump this out and now we need this foundation and we're building the 3 walls and we need windows in the walls, so you have window now, so we're going to put 2 new windows to create the same look, and now your vents are here. So I'm gonna recommend we extend the 2 HVAC vents out towards the window. So now we've got some HVAC work. Said, well, the county codes and municipality is going to make me install the proper amount of outlets for this room. So if this is more than 12 feet wide, I'm going to have, you need an outlet every 12 feet. There's going to be an outlet in there, at least one. Well, I didn't want electrical in there, which I don't even really need it. Well, but they force us to have it. So then I'm drywalling inside. We're deciding what to do with the beam that kind of holds up the house when we create this bump out. So I'm explaining that you can do a beam and a header that's underneath your floor joists, and that'll hold up the second floor, but it's going to stick down about 12 inches, 12 to 14 inches, and then it'll either go straight across with the ceiling at the lower height, or we raise it back up when we get to the other side. Or we do an internal beam where we cut off some of the floor and the band board from the edge of the flooring, and we cut out more drywall and we install that header flush, same height as those floor joists, and we're joist hangering, and then you can, your ceiling can go straight into that bump out. And it'll look like the same ceiling, same height, crown molding can go around. But I've got base trim, windows, window trim, crown molding, and then we get outside in some really decorative wood so that we don't have to do brick. Nice look at wood. This would look awesome. Paint all of that. That's basically a siding job. We got to wrap, flash, keep it dry, put a little 4-foot roof on it. So it's not a big gable roof or anything, but it's a roof. So we got to frame the roof. We got to sheet the roof. We got to put shingles, or then you go, well, if it's smaller, do you do like a copper roof? Would that look good with the home? So once you look at all this, it's every single step, even the flooring. We got to extend the flooring. Do you know what the flooring is? We can put that into there. Where can we find it? Hopefully we can still get it. It's every step of a room addition. You're building a room addition that's 10, 12, 15 foot wide and 4 foot out. And so when you look at that and you go, well, geez, you know, if a room addition costs a couple $100,000 possibly, but this is 25% of the size of most of those room additions, can I get this for 25% of the cost of what a full room addition might be? Absolutely not. There's, you know, you have to still perform all that. You have to still go through all that, and you have to do every piece of that. So the theory that we talk about in the industry, that the first foot is the most expensive foot and the last foot is the most cost-effective foot and the cheapest, well, that's kind of how that theory plays out. You know, we still have to dig for a foundation and pour concrete and then build a subfloor and walls. It's just less of it, but you still have to do it all. So it's, there's just not a ratio that works out in a simple fashion to make that meet and go, yep, it should be 25% the cost. Well, then that should be $50,000. And it just doesn't work out that way. So I've got plenty of different scenarios like this put together for everybody today. But also, we've got what's going on at your home. We've got another segment here coming up. We're going to take a quick short break, but 314-436-7900 will get you right here to me. We can talk about what you need, what you want, what you've got going on this weekend, a beautiful weekend. So let's get in here and get it talked about, get it done for you. We'll be right back after this break.
That window is made, surrounded by some plastic trim that makes it look like kind of like a nine light window.
Sure.
I don't know what they, I guess what they used to seal the trim to the door itself was some sort of like a, almost like a putty type consistency. And every summer when it gets hot, this putty tends to like drip down onto the painted surfaces of the bottom half of the door.
Yeah.
And I have to keep cleaning it up and painting it. And I was kind of wondering, I think I've one year I did put, tried caulking around the outside of that trim, and even that didn't stop it from running underneath. So I wonder if you had any ideas on how to counteract that.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot that you can do about that. Obviously, it sounds like the door gets a lot of sun exposure. And
well,
probably,
it really doesn't. It's really right underneath the trees all summer long. But so I don't really know why it's it does that. It kind of looks like it's crying at the bottom of that window,
yeah,
with just kind of running down maybe a couple inches from the bottom of the window.
Yeah, and that's around all the windows. So is that stuff, as that goes bad and runs down, and that sealant is getting soft and running down, it's coming down the sides also. So there's a lot of that. And if it runs out, it runs out. It'll stop doing it, but then you really have no sealant left in there for if there's any water or anything hitting it. So I would say to the only two ways that I would know to completely stop that from happening is, one, either a whole new door, just a complete new door frame system, pull that whole thing out and install a whole new door, comes with a new warranty and all of that, and it's from the manufacturer. So if you get a good door, the buying up the food chain is going to make that less likely to happen. Or there is there are companies out there that can change that glass in the door, and they take that plastic trim off.
Okay.
And they, and some of them actually, now you might not want this, but they do it on front doors and stuff where they could do a decorative glass. They can take a plain looking door and change it from regular glass to decorative, cool looking glass. Or if it's solid, they can cut an opening and install that from a solid door to now make it a glass door. I would have good conversations with them about why you're doing this, so that you can say, this is why I want to do this. You know, can you change this out, put everything back? And then what kind of warranty do you have that says this either won't happen again, or how long will you cover it for if it were to happen? How long's your warranty, and does it include that happening?
Okay.
Because they may say no. They may say, no, gotcha. Yeah, we can't guarantee that wouldn't happen. But that would be the two routes I would say to go, because basically you're just waiting time for that sealant to stop doing that, and that just means that there's really nothing left, and hopefully you never get wind-driven rains in there and pounding on the door that's going to start getting in between that trim and getting inside the door. I've seen it happen where the water's literally coming out of the door handle, but it's starting from the glass above and running behind the steel to the handle, and it's running in. Yeah, it can be a mess later, but I think that's where you're going to be. New door, new glass.
Okay. Well, it's a 30-year-old door, so I put it in myself. It was just kind of one of those stock off the shelf family type doors, so it's not like an expensive door or anything like that. So that may be the route to go, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And yeah, if you can just go buy a new door and you've got the ability to DIY, put that in yourself like you did the last one, more power to you. That's awesome.
All right. Perfect.
Well, all right.
I appreciate the input.
Yeah, no problem, Brett. I appreciate the call. And I find myself in the exact same situation as Brett right now. In my house, I've got four doors that I'm going to change out. And we've kind of, we talk all the time about making selections and how to get through it. And who are you buying what for? And how long are you trying to get it to last? Cause like we have a door manufacturer called Provia that makes great, great doors. They will have great warranties. They can come pre-finished. They are just a really good door system. A lot of companies use this actual door manufacturer. And now where I'm at with my house, I'm really like, I don't know how much longer we're going to truly live there. So we're kind of looking at how much do we really want to invest into these great, great doors that we have mediocre doors and they've lasted like 23 years or however old the house is. Probably should have changed them about 5 years ago, but they've still gotten me to here. So it's not like going back to the same type of door isn't going to last at all. There's just better ones that give you more peace of mind, that'll look better, that'll last better, that'll really work better for the long haul. But again, that's just not where we're at. And when I was at one of the big box stores and I'm looking at what door can they make to fit this patio door of mine, and I want the blinds and the glass, we know that, and we end up with more of a builder grade-ish type to spend less money, and they actually had a door that would have fit at the store that came in damaged, and I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, well, that could actually work, and it was just a piece on the threshold. It wasn't that bad, and I was like, how much of a discount? Well, it really wasn't enough of a discount for me to deal with the damage. So I said, nope, let's just order all four of my doors. We'll get them to come in. We'll be great. Well, you know, sometimes you need to think a little deeper into it, because guess what happened? They called me. Hey, the first two of your doors came in. The first two came in. Unfortunately, they're both damaged. Yep. That's why, and she's like, do you want to come look at them? Or, you know, there's this. I'm like, no, I don't want to come look at them. I'm not going to try and put in, you know, fix damaged doors. I'm not, order two more doors. But do you think I had a hint that that might happen? So when we say, like, not everything's built alike and everything can be a little different, a little better, we talk about buying up the food chain. We purchase at Mosby Building Arts a lot of Provia doors. I guarantee you, I know of doors that have had issues that we've had to go through a warranty and fix the door. It's going to happen, but it's far and few in between. I'm certain we've had, I hadn't seen it with my own eyes, but I'm pretty positive we've probably had a door or two come in with some sort of damage. But when you're ordering all these doors and you get one or two, that's going to be kind of common. Unfortunately, you got to get what you need or get them to do a new one and it got damaged during shipping or whatever happened. Those things will happen. But boy, should I have been clued in that if there's one sitting over here damaged, what do you think the likelihood is? I'm saving a bunch of money, but man, how many tries is it going to take to get doors that aren't damaged? Really makes me wonder. So when we talk about peace of mind, we talk about buying up the food chain, we talk about getting things that are better, we do this for a very good reason, and it's about odds. What are the odds? Well, when I saw that damaged door, I should have known. Odds are I might get a damaged door and I might end up waiting longer than I wanted, but I'm paying way less, so I'll wait for it. And I also got to paint the door myself. I got to get my own doorknobs. I got to install them. So I'm using my time to buy down this door because I can do that and save the dollars, and it's a labor of love, and I can get through that. But on the other end, when we're with Mosby and we're looking at what a painter's cost and what do they get paid and how much to paint a door and what's the finish look different from the manufacturer finish, that leads us towards that pre-finished door. So it's good to consider both directions, but it's also it's good to understand what you might get and just know, and then you just know what to expect, and that's what we're trying to do. So we're going to get into our middle hour break here, but don't forget, like Brett, you can find me right here, 314-436-7900. Stay with us. Do not touch that dial. We are back. We are back having a great time. A lot of great conversations, questions, everything going on for you right here today. Again, you can find me at 314-436-7900. We got quite a little bit of time left, so we can definitely get some more in. And speaking of getting more in, let's go straight to Robert and see what's happening. Hey, Robert, what's going on, my friend?
Well, I have a question for you.
Sure.
My patio, when I walk out my back door, headed toward my in-ground pool, about halfway in the middle of the concrete patio, there's an inch and a half wide plastic drain that runs the width of my patio from side to side. It's 24 foot long. And over the years, 30 years of concrete dancing like it does, it has crumbled and the top of the drain does not seat anymore. So my problem is, I went to Menards, and all they had was two-inch-wide drainage. So my question is it worth it to get the two-inch-wide and cut that drain, cut the concrete to fit the new one, or buy something to just fill it? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't recommend filling it because it's that's there because you want the concrete sloping away from the pool and away from the house. So it kind of gives it a channel for water to run sideways when it gets to the middle of that patio. So it's definitely good to have it there. I do question if you buy a 2-inch wide one and cut it down, how's it going to work? How's it going to look? And how's it going to fit? Do you end up with issues later because you just can't quite get it right? It's hard to make it a perfect cut. And it just doesn't stay in there very well. So if it were mine, I would try and see if you can locate the same one that is the inch and a half wide that maybe you can put on there. Or then I would opt towards trying to cut that 2-inch to keep that functioning as a drain. I would definitely try and keep that functioning as a drain for sure.
Okay, I like that. And I thought about renting like a concrete saw from Home Depot and just trimming one side and then opening up the other side to fit that new 2-inch.
Yeah.
And then like using some concrete caulk to just make up, you know, the difference of my cut. To
yeah.
Kind of make it look good after I put that insert in. Maybe put some, I don't know, gravel under it or something to get it flush with the concrete.
You're definitely on the right track. Whatever you do, yeah, you want to keep that. You definitely want gravel under it, like if you cut some of that concrete away. And if you can keep it the same size without cutting that concrete, you might be a little better off just because the water runs into the plastic and then runs towards the sides. If you create a wider space, you'll end up with possibly you'll want a urethane that good with the caulk to try and keep the water going to that plastic drain and not between them. So there's you don't want the water to go between the concrete and the plastic drain and just straight down, because then it'll start working its way at eroding and compacting the base that's underneath the concrete. And then that's just as bad, because then you'll get more movement in the concrete. You might end up needing new concrete sooner than you like. So if you could stray from cutting that concrete, and or if you had to cut the concrete, really make sure you're doing like a caulked urethane and you've got a system that's trying to get that water into that plastic drain.
Okay, yes, I follow you 100%.
Yep.
I appreciate that so much. Yes, because even if if I might hit a little rebar in that concrete when I cut it. That's what I'm most worried about.
Yeah. So you might be better off trying to cut that 2-inch down and then urethane caulking it once it's in there to dress it up and putting that on top of it if you cannot find the actual inch and a half.
Okay, so I need to search for the inch and a half then. That's what I need to search for.
Yep.
Because I know that it's not straight anymore. You know, it's 30 years of concrete doing what concrete does.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Okay, I think I have a clear picture if I'm going to tackle this myself or if I'm going to job it out.
Yep.
I don't know yet.
Hey, well, good luck. I wish you luck. You're on the right track. You got the right mindset for sure. And I'm going to also I'm gonna explain how we at Mosby Building Arts and with B&W Concrete, and this is really a B&W Concrete thing, how we do driveway drains when we put driveways in that need a drain like that, and you do that 4-inch wide trench drain that they put into concrete, because there's a big difference in how we want that and how B&W Concrete does that against most concrete companies that I've seen in the past and how those drains go in. So we're going to get into our final break here. When we return, if you need anything, feel free to give me a call, 314-436-7900. And I'll talk more about those concrete drains right after this when we return. Final segment, final hour, final minutes of the show. What do you need? We do have some time for you if you want to jump in real quick. 314-436-7900. I will get at you as fast as I can. Let's go into this trench drain thing that Robert kind of brought up into my mind to think about how work is performed, what makes work different, and also explaining that difference so that we set the right expectations and we understand, because expectations can go two different ways. They can not be explained well, and you're like, wow, I didn't get what I thought I was going to get. Or they cannot be set really well in the manner that maybe you don't understand why you're paying more or why it would cost more. And you're like, okay, well, they didn't explain things well. You don't realize they didn't explain things well, but you're just looking at it going, well, wow, it's a driveway with a drain and it costs more. And I'm just going to go this direction because why would I spend more? It's concrete and a drain. Well, so here's how a trench drain is typically installed in a concrete driveway. So if the driveway is sloping towards the house, towards the garage, and you need this 4-inch wide trench drain, however long, put in, and then you need to manage where that water gets piped and where that water goes. So typically they lay the rock base, they tamp it, they get a good rock base, they stake this trench drain with some rebar where they want it, they kind of hold it in place. It's the same thickness as the concrete. So they come in and they pour 4-inch thick concrete to the side of this trench drain. And then the other direction, they're sloping down towards it. They pour it to the trench drain and they're good. You've got a good, it's a 4-inch thick driveway. Well, concrete kind of moves, expands. It moves with the ground. It shifts. So the minute that concrete starts moving around a little bit, it separates the concrete from that drain. And then you need to think about caulking that to keep that water going into that drain. Because if you get any separation, the water that runs down, a lot of it's going to go between the drain and the concrete and below. And then you're going to start getting more settlement, more movement, more compaction. And everything will magnify and it'll start creating more. And it leads you to end up having more issues sooner with this concrete driveway where this drain is. And that is typically how that's put in. Now, with Mosby Building Arts, with this is B&W. I got this theory from Larry at B&W. It's what we've come up with for our driveways, and it's because this is how they address it, and this is what we love about them. So now imagine you put in this rock base, except where the drain's going to go, you dig that down deeper. So you dig down where there's an extra 4 inches underneath this drain, and you mount this drain where it's kind of floating in the air over top of this U-shaped trench that's 4 inches deep underneath the bottom of the trench drain. And then you take rebar and you bend it so it goes from the driveway slab, dips down, goes around underneath that trench drain and back up and into the other slab. And you place these rebar in there. And then you pour this driveway so that fills up with concrete. So your 4-inch thick driveway literally goes to the side of that trench drain. It goes down, around, underneath it, back up the other side. So it creates this concrete trough that this drain is sitting in. And then it's locked in there. And so what you do is you place your control joints and expansion joints around that. So most concrete companies, when you have that trench drain, they're going, well, I'm going to put my next control joint 8 or 10 feet off that trench drain in each direction, because that drain is actually now like an expansion joint because the concrete is not connected. Well, in this system, the concrete is connected. It's solid. You're not going to get a bunch of water underneath it or through it. It's going to go into the drain, and it's going to hold solid with the rebar and the concrete. So now your expansion and control joints need to be closer because you have to take into account, like, the whole slab there as if that trench drain is in the middle of a slab. So you might find a control joint 5 feet or 2 feet away from that instead of 10 feet or 8 feet. So it's just a more solid system, and it will last longer. The life expectancy of that will be so much better and longer than the life expectancy of the other system. So now you come into that same conversation I keep having all the time is then, so what are you in for? How long are you staying? How long do you want it to last? All these things come into play in making that decision. But understanding, at least now I know, that's why this driveway is more. That's why this driveway is better. That's why it will last better. That's why you don't have to accept that decision. You don't have to have it installed or get it or pay for it. That's okay. It's a matter of being educated and understanding what you're about to get, and then you can make that decision. I kind of knew, I was talking about those doors, and two of them came in. I knew and understood, this is what I'm getting. I'm going to have more work. I could have a better door that lasts longer, but I'm probably going to move in the next 5 years or so. So I know they'll last way, way longer than that, and that's fine. And I feel like I'm a pretty good painter, so I'll paint the doors myself. I'll wrap the outside with some metal myself, and I'll make this really good, really solid thing for me that will last long enough that it will still look good and work good and be good when I sell the house. But what's the lasting value after that? I don't know. That's no longer up to me now, and it doesn't really matter, but I'm making that decision. So it's just a great thing to consider all of the options that can be out there. But hey, I also wanted to kind of thank everybody, thank all the callers, thank all the listeners too. I'm really having a great time with the KMOX community, with everybody at Odyssey, with just everybody out there, the listeners, the callers, the questions, having conversations because I'm out and about with the Mosby logo, and people are like, oh, I literally, like, Starbucks, they say Rich, and someone's like, oh my gosh, you're the Rich that does, oh, that is so awesome. And we have this conversation, and it's really cool. It's a great thing, and overwhelming support and appreciation to me that I'm always receiving is just I really want to thank everybody out there for that, and I want to give that thank and support and appreciation right back, because you helped me be able to be that, and you helped me to be able to answer and talk and really deliver that service. Without you, that service really doesn't do much, mean much, or help anybody much. So I love the support. I appreciate it. The whole community is great. St. Louis community is great. But, hey, I got to go. We're at wit's end here. But, hey, be good. Be good to your homes. Be good to everybody. And I'll talk to everybody next week.